Once again, you're listening to The Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Well, folks, a lot of things are happening, and I'm going to touch on a few of them tonight. But before I get into tonight's broadcast, I just want to give you something to laugh about. I'm holding in my hands a fax from the Republic of Texas. And I've laughed so much over these people that I'm over my giggle stage, but maybe you're not. It says, it has come to our attention through an extremely reliable source that the federal government has a hit order out on the president of the Republic of Texas. The governor of Texas, George W. Bush, was depositioned on February 17, 1996, through the process of tacit procuration and found to be in default on the writ of quo warranto issued to the corporate state of Texas on January 16, 1996. All of that, folks, is a total lie. Governor George Bush was never depositioned by anybody. In fact, I read you his reply to their service. These people are crazy. You better lock them up real quick. I continue. The president called for the convening of a citizens' grand jury to investigate government drug running and investigations into the capital trust funds used to steal the money of the people of America. This grand jury would be beyond the controlling mechanism of the current corrupt court system, and all the dirt will come forward. For these reasons was the order given. The Republic of Texas is about to stop the New World Order in its tracks, and the bad guys are reacting as they always do. Oh, man, this is a whole can of cashews down there. Good luck, guys. You're going to stop the New World Order? You can't even take possession of your own state house. Listen to this. The order is a crash and burn order, which in federalese means assassinate. The code name for the president of the republic is, quote, Captain Kirk, end quote. An attempt was to be executed on February the 17th, but was thwarted. Another lie. There was no attempt on anybody's life, and nothing was thwarted. This order by the federal government is their response to lawful process which reestablished the Republic of Texas. This is very serious and very real. This message is going out in order to let the people know what business the federal government is about. Murder and mayhem. We all know that, but they're not concerned about the Republic of Texas. And here's another page. For maximum distribution via global fax networks or any other effective means, February 1996, my fellow Americans, you will see in today's faxes an alarming alert as to information coming forth concerning a hit order from the federal government on the president of the Republic of Texas, James C. Van Kirk. Where have we heard that name before? As anyone who has followed the events in Texas knows, these visionary and courageous individuals have used the lawful process throughout their historical efforts to reestablish their original constituted form of government known as the Republic of Texas, spelled R-O-P, which means rope, as in rope in the suckers. And this is the government's response to those abiding by the law. It certainly says a lot. And he continues. The problem the government is having is that they have no lawful recourse to rebut or refute the evidence presented by the Republic of Texas, or any other sovereign state for that matter. They are defenseless from the standpoint of law, so I guess they feel they must resort to violent force. But again, there are now so many people on the move to bring forth the truth that the tide cannot be stopped. That tide is so full of flotsam and jetsam, folks, you're never going to see the water. I can guarantee it. Maybe my giggles aren't gone. And he continues, if one individual is gone, there are many more right there to pick up the plan and carry it forth to its fruition, make no mistake. Despite what unlawful force may come against any of us, we will always maintain the lawful path ourselves to complete our goal of returning this country to its constitutional foundational form of government. Today's messages will now be public record and acknowledged by millions of people nationwide and worldwide through this medium. It will now be known by all how our own government is reacting to individuals following the lawful processes to enact needed change in this country. Folks, these people wouldn't know a lawful process if it hit them upside the head like the broadside of a barn. And he says, remember, there is an element of safety in the public revealing of such murderous plans. All should voice their outrage at this affront to freedom, justice, and law. Let governmental officials know that this kind of behavior cannot and will not be tolerated in a civilized, lawful society. Let them know that we know of their outlaw plans. This will stop such actions as this. When they know that we have shed light on these plans, it stops them in their tracks because they can only work in the cover of darkness and secrecy. And get this, folks, in light. The star is bright. The truth is light. Rex Weeks and David A. Newby, whoever they are. And now this republic that is taking people back to the common law and back the way it's supposed to be. You're going to love this. John C. Van Kirk, President, Republic of Texas, has written his first emergency executive order and notice and has placed the state of Texas under martial law. Oh, these guys are good. I got to call Whoopi Goldberg. I got to turn her on to these guys. She could get them on the next HBO Comedy Hour. Listen to this. Let me back up here. Emergency executive order and notice. By the order of the President of the Republic of Texas, it is hereby mandated that this order shall serve as notice. Each and every recipient of this lawful fax notice shall be held personally, jointly, and severally responsible for any and all actual or inferred damage to the Republic of Texas or to the person of the President of that Republic, John C. Van Kirk. I guess that means me because I got this fax. They can hold me personally responsible. Oh, you guys are a joke, I got to tell you. As of 10:05 a.m., February 19th, 1996, the President of the Republic of Texas has declared an emergency throughout the Republic. This action is taken due to information from high-level sources within various government agencies. Boy, that's a big leak. That's a real big leak. Within various governmental agencies of an existing assassination order against the life of President John C. Van Kirk. This operation by rogue agents is titled, quote, Crash and Burn, end quote. President Van Kirk has been assigned the code name of, you guessed it, folks. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. He's Captain Kirk. All recipients of this lawful order shall be held subject to the jurisdictional venues of both the Republic of Texas and the current statutory scheme and penalties. All recipients are hereby placed under the authority of the Office of the President of the Republic of Texas to be used, 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 as mandated
to protect this republic from all usurpers to her sovereignty and her elected offices. He has now declared himself chief, absolute, 100% dictator. And just think, all you people are rushing down there and signing a piece of paper. Giving up your citizenship, which means you've given up all protection of your rights under the Constitution or any laws of the state of Texas or of the United States of America, and you're even so stupid to put your thumbprint on it. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. I'm going to call my mom and dad and my sister and her husband and her children and tell them to get out of Texas. It's been overrun by lunatics. Cashew nuts have grown legs and are walking around in the state of Texas. It goes on. That's not all, folks. Listen to this. All peace officers and all law enforcement officers under the state of Texas shall, upon receipt of this notice and order, assume that all federal law enforcement officers are potential hostiles. These guys are going to jail real quick. This situation is predicated upon the call for the convening of a citizens' grand jury by the President of the Republic of Texas, which will expose international as well as federal crimes against the people of the Republic of Texas. By this executive order, it is hereby mandated under seal this 19th day of February 1996, John C. Van Kirk, President, Republic of Texas. Didn't anybody tell him that if he's a dictator, he doesn't need a grand jury, he can do whatever the hell he wants to do? Somebody better get down here and set this guy straight. I mean, he's just off on the wrong track. If you're going to be a dictator, at least do it right!
Ladies and gentlemen, we all know what happened at Ruby Ridge. At least I think we all know. There may be somebody out here who doesn't. Randy Weaver and his family were approached by an agent of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and was actually an informant, was sold a shotgun that was about a quarter of an inch too short for the legal limit. A quarter of an inch, folks. These socialist puke face scum kill people over a quarter of an inch. Can you believe that? Don't ever stand next to one of them at the urinal. Randy Weaver was then approached by another agent who then bought that same shotgun from him. And then they arrested Randy Weaver. Randy had a son, two daughters, and a baby on the way. Actually, at that time, the baby wasn't on the way yet. And they told Randy they were going to put him away forever unless he agreed. See, this was all a setup just to get somebody to spy on other people. Unless he agreed to spy on his neighbors and people that he knew. Randy, being a good person, said, no, I will not do this. So he was sent home on his own recognizance and told to come back on a court date. And they said they were going to lock him up forever. Would you come back after they told you that? After they set you up, arrested you, told you you're going to jail forever, or you got a rat on your friends for a quarter of an inch of a barrel that Randy probably didn't even measure, didn't even know that it was short. Most people can't tell the difference between 16 inches and 15 and 3/4 inches just by looking at it. Nor would they even guess to do it. Now, if it obviously looked short, sure. Everybody would say, whoa, wait a minute, I don't want to get involved in that. But 1/4 of an inch, folks. And then they told him, when he said, no, we're going to put you away forever, and they actually expected him to come back, I wouldn't have come back either. So Randy took his family and headed to Idaho, where there are people who think like he thinks. It doesn't matter what you think about what he thinks, as long as he doesn't injure the person or property of any other human being in this world, he's entitled to think whatever he wants to think and worship at whatever altar he wants to. Well, it took them a while, but they finally found him. And they sent a team of marshals up there who were surprised by the dogs. And Randy and his son, hearing the dogs barking, thought maybe there was a deer on their property and they wanted to put some meat in the larder. So Randy and his son and their friend, Kevin, went, grabbed their rifles and went running out the door. Randy went up on the road. His son and his friend went down a path into the forest and ran straight into a U.S. Marshal's ambush. First thing they did was shoot and kill the boy's dog. The boy turned and started to run, and they shot him dead in the back. In the back. Killed him dead. 14-year-old boy. The other boy ran up to the cabin, and Randy Weaver ran up to the cabin, and his friend told him that his son was dead. And then the siege began. Over 500 federal agents, military personnel, BATF, FBI, local law enforcement, tanks, armored personnel carriers, and helicopters surrounding Randy Weaver, his dead son, his wife, two daughters, and an 8-month-old baby. What was that all about? Before it was over, one of the most despicable creatures that's ever crawled upon this earth, an FBI sniper by the name of Lon Horiuchi, murdered Vicki Weaver as she stood in the door of the cabin, holding her baby in her arms to her breast, shot her in the head and killed her. She fell back into the cabin, still clutching her baby in a death grip, and died in a great pool of blood that spread over the floor of the cabin in front of her two daughters, her husband, and their friend, another boy. This happened when Randy and his friend Kevin went out to the birthing shed where they had his son laid out to prepare him for burial. Randy Weaver was shot. His friend was shot, both wounded. His son and his wife dead. And they prepared to stay in that cabin and be murdered by the police state.
Luckily, a couple of reporters walking through the forest where they weren't supposed to be stumbled upon a clearing where a helicopter was attaching a rubber bladder full of fuel by cable to the underside. They were going to drop it on the cabin and burn Randy Weaver and his family just like they did the Branch Davidians in Waco, Texas. But that was to come later. When they saw the reporters watching them, they stopped, disconnected the fuel bladder, and aborted that mission, thank God. Eventually, Randy Weaver and the family members who were alive came out. A man by the name of Lieutenant Colonel James Bogreitz claims a lot of credit for that, but you don't know what I know about that. See, he claims he went to help Randy Weaver. That is not true. He was called by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. He was working for them. He was wearing a wire the entire time, recording every conversation that he had with Randy Weaver. I don't know if Jack McLam knew about that or not. But I can tell you that's a fact. We also have on tape around here somewhere that Lieutenant Colonel James Bogreitz at one of his lectures in California, and we have it on tape in his own voice, admitted that he has been a federal informant since he was the age of 18 years old. And one of these nights I'll play that tape for you. Randy Weaver was tried and found innocent, ladies and gentlemen. Innocent. Now, what does a man like that do? His wife is dead. His son is dead. His friend was wounded. He was wounded. The communist news networks and the socialist Marxist scum journalists across this country have vilified him every chance that they got, and he was guilty of nothing. They found him innocent. He had committed no crime from the beginning. The only thing that they found him guilty of was he didn't show up at court when he was supposed to. But yet they found him innocent of the crime he was supposed to show up for. The federal government has gone off the deep end, and a lot of local law enforcement agencies have followed them. And it's going to stop. And then came a whole lot of other incidents that most of you don't know about and probably never will, and there really isn't time to go through them all. But then the big one came, Waco, Texas. And everything they said about what they did in Waco, Texas was a lie. From the beginning to the end, and even to this day, they are lying. And it has been proven over and over and over again. They said they made the raid on the day that they did, February the 28th, because the local newspaper had come out with a story vilifying David Koresh and the Branch Davidians. But you see, they lied about that because the warrant expired on the 28th. And they lied, ladies and gentlemen, because the local paper didn't just happen to come out with that story. They did it in concert at the request of federal agents to propagandize the public in Waco, Texas, so that they would not come to the aid of their neighbors. And true to form, the sheeple, the stupid, stupid sheeple in Waco, Texas, did not go to help their neighbors, whom they all knew were good people, never hurt anybody. And to this day, I will not drive through Waco, Texas. I will not go near that town. I will not spend a nickel there, because during the siege, I was there. And the people of that city put up billboards thanking the ATF for bringing so much money to their town.
making it probably one of the most despicable, immoral, and unethical cities upon the face of this earth. I will not speak to anyone who lives in Waco, Texas. I will not speak to anyone who drives through Waco, Texas, or who spends one nickel in Waco, Texas, or who orders any product from Waco, Texas, ever in my life. You see, I was there. I watched it. And when I took photographs of BATF officers, he pulled his gun out of his holster and threatened me and tried to take my camera. It's a good thing he didn't, because Andy was standing right next to me with her hand in her purse, clutching her revolver. And had he made any such move, she would have shot him dead on the spot. The Branch Davidians were murdered, ladies and gentlemen, pure and simple. And I said that they would be murdered on this broadcast. I called that shot perfectly. And the very same night that I made that statement, I made the statement that if Americans did not walk, crawl, drive, or get to Waco, Texas by any means that they could and stand between the federal agents and the people in that church, they were all going to be murdered. And they were. That very same night that I made that statement, WWCR was burned to the ground. It didn't stop our broadcast, though, because very quickly, the good people at Swiss America Trading got us on WRNO in New Orleans, Louisiana. And it didn't stop with Waco. It is continuing to this day, ladies and gentlemen. And you're going to find out about some of those incidents in just a few moments. Ladies and gentlemen, the hour of the time is brought to you by Swiss America Trading, the good people who have put together a means whereby you can obtain real money, substance, wealth. The only real money that's been recognized by all peace peoples and all nations in the history of the world. The only money that, when it was used, never failed. No paper economy has ever succeeded or has ever not failed. It is the only commodity that maintains its value over centuries and millennium. By the same number of loaves of bread today as you could 500 years ago or 1,500 years ago, and you will still be able to buy the same number of loaves of bread. In 100 years. We face an economic disaster. It is in the works as I speak. Have you counted the days until March the 1st? How many of you have forgotten that the funding of the government has not been resolved and there is no balanced budget legislation in Congress? How many of you realize that on March the 1st, if this is not taken care of, the United States will go into default? And to keep the government running at this present time, they are raiding every fund and every pot full of money and every trust that they can find, including your pension funds if you work for the government. How about that? Were you aware of that? Did you care? Are you all so stoked? And the world has told you that he's not going to be the presidential candidate for the Republican Party, and if by some miracle they had to nominate him, it'll split the party down the middle. And if that's not enough, Ross Perot will present a candidate, and Bill Clinton will slide right into the White House again. You guys just don't understand, do you? You just don't get it yet. One thing you had better get is something to cover your rear end. And you can get that at Swiss America Trading. They guarantee what they do. They have a buyback policy. If all of a sudden the value of what you purchased plummets to nothing, they will buy it back at a prearranged, pre-agreed price based upon your purchase price. And you can't lose. Only they can. 1-800-289-2646. 1-800-289-2646. Call Frank. You can't get a hold of Frank, talk to anybody. They're all wonderful people. They'll help you. And don't beat around the bush with them. Don't play the big shot. If you can only afford $25 a month, tell them that so that they can help you and so that you don't get flustered and embarrassed. And if you have $10,000 to invest, tell them that so that everything's up front. They want to be up front with you. You be up front with them. I know one guy called and played this game like he had a whole lot of money. Then later he called me and said that the coins that they were talking about cost too much and he couldn't afford them. I said, what are you doing, dummy? Huh? Get straight. 1-800-289-2646. Do it now, folks. You know how you are. So do I. How many of you ever heard of Brunswick, Ohio? Probably not many, unless you live near that little city. This story is a prominent feature of this issue of Veritas, but I'm going to read it to you tonight because you need to know about it, and you need to know tonight. The story was submitted by Helen Johnson, the wife of J.J. Johnson, of the Ohio Citizens Militia. Brunswick, Ohio, folks, seems like a peaceful city. John M. Lakin, 54, lived at 4095 Rolling Hills Drive with his wife Beverly Lakin, 49, and their son John Jr., age 9.
John Lakin Sr. was a disabled chemical engineer. His wife, Beverly, is suffering from multiple sclerosis. The Lakins lived at this address for at least 9 years. Most of his neighbors will tell you that John Lakin was an eccentric, a veteran, an NRA member, a political activist, but above all, he was a patriotic American who had a strong mistrust and fear, yes, fear, folks, of the encroaching power of government. He saw Waco. He saw the Randy Weaver fiasco. He wasn't stupid. His neighbors will also tell you that while in his home, he carried a loaded firearm for personal protection. And these days, many middle-aged and elderly people do that. Beverly Lakin received care from home health aides who were employed by the Moneta County Human Services Department. John Lakin Jr. attended Kidder Elementary School in town. He was a quiet, very well-behaved student who excelled in math. He had a lot of friends at school, and he had a lot of friends in his neighborhood. The account, ladies and gentlemen, of exactly what transpired during a four-day period beginning on Thursday, March 30th, 1995, is from eyewitness accounts, media accounts, law enforcement personnel, the testimony of public officials at the Brunswick Safety Meeting of April 15, 1995, pictures taken by neighbors of Mr. Lakin's home, and scanner interception of police radio transmissions. The result, ladies and gentlemen, is terrifying. Can't happen in America, you say? On Thursday, March 30th, 1995, John Lakin became angry when his wife advised him that the health care aides had filed a complaint concerning his firearms while a young child lived in the house. He told her that the police would probably be accompanying them upon their next visit. One totally unconfirmed report said that Lakin described how he could kill the health aide with just the butt of a gun. If this is true, was he just trying to inform the aide that she need not fear the weapons in his home, that he did not need bullets to kill someone? All reports, ladies and gentlemen, confirm that Lakin did not threaten to harm or kill anyone. According to Mrs. Lakin, her husband loaded all of his three firearms that night. He was prepared to fight, but only if anyone tried to take his weapons. You see, John Lakin was a man of principle. He was prepared to lay down his life in defense of his rights. On Friday, March 31st, at 3 p.m., a plainclothes Brunswick police officer, Sam Puzella, accompanied by an unidentified Brunswick detective, arrived at the Lakin home to conduct a welfare check, whatever that is. Puzella knocked on the door. Lakin asked if they had a search warrant. Puzella refused to produce a warrant because he didn't have one. Lakin lawfully refused them entry to his home. Puzella then demanded entry. When Lakin refused again, Puzella kicked down the door and Lakin shot Puzella in the chest. At 3:30 p.m., a Metro Health helicopter airlifted Puzella from Lakin's property. Police reinforcements began to arrive in force. The law enforcement reaction was extreme. Listen to this. By late afternoon, 4 SWAT teams, 300 law enforcement personnel, 200 firefighters. Thank God the city didn't burn down at that time. What were they doing there? 200 firefighters. They should all be fired. Let them fight that fire. And an armored personnel carrier named Mother had converged at the Lakin home. All of these facts are on public record from the testimony given by Police Chief Bayer at the Brunswick Safety Meeting. At 8:30 p.m., police squads attempted to rush the home. Lakin shot two more officers. The neighborhood was evacuated within a one-half-mile radius. Gas, electric, telephone, and water service were shut off to the home. Fiber optic cameras were installed on light poles, and the interior of the Lakin home became visible to the police. Street lights were knocked out by the police. Fire hoses were run into the basement where Lakin and his son had retreated, and water was pumped in at approximately 1,000 gallons per minute. Those 200 firefighters were probably all fighting to get a hold of a portion of that hose. Between 8:30 p.m. Friday and 6 a.m. Saturday morning, neighbors monitoring scanners reported they heard the following. Reports of water being pumped into the basement to force Lakin and his son back upstairs. Snipers were given orders to shoot Lakin on sight. One sniper was heard saying he had Lakin in his sight and asked if he should shoot, but permission was denied. Quote, no, not yet, end quote. And of course, a little gallows humor. You see, Lakin had a flagpole in his yard. And over the scanner came, quote, we got the flag, does that mean we won? End quote. On Saturday, April 1st, at 11 a.m., the armored personnel carrier, APC, smashed into the garage door, breaking it open. Tear gas was inserted. The armored personnel carrier then drove into the east wall of the house, and again, tear gas was inserted. The APC then breached the backyard patio doors, and once again, tear gas was inserted. Later, police reports would state that Lakin and his son died during this period. Sunday morning, April 2nd, at about 10:15 a.m., police fired tear gas through broken windows. They drove the armored personnel carrier up to the front window, which they then entered. They emerged moments later, carrying Beverly Lakin. Approximately 12 SWAT team members entered the Lakin home. They were in there for 4 hours, ladies and gentlemen, while everybody outside waited breathlessly. 4 hours later, the team emerged with the bodies of John Lakin and his son, John Jr. Police Chief Bayer stated that the bodies of Mr. Lakin and his son were found in the bathroom, partially within the shower stall. Medina County Coroner Dr. Neil Grabenstetter said both died of single gunshot wounds to the head. Does that sound familiar? How many bodies did they found at Waco with single gunshot wounds to the head? Execution style. And when you watch the Branch Davidians' last will and testament tape, you know that they did not commit suicide, nor were they killed by each other. A gas mask and two tanks of oxygen were found next to Mr. Lakin and his son. A 10-gauge shotgun and a 27-caliber rifle were reported to also have been found in the bathroom. But you have to take the word of the officers for that. The deaths have been ruled a murder-suicide. The police claim that John Lakin shot his son and then turned the shotgun upon himself. If John Lakin murdered his son and then himself, why did it take the SWAT team 4 hours to find and report their deaths? Why did Mr. Lakin and his son have a gas mask and two bottles of oxygen with them? And why were they found in the shower? Could it be that John Lakin took his son to the shower with the gas mask and oxygen to escape the tear gas? Were they wet? Where were the wounds? Could it be that to avenge their fellow officers, cover up the blunders of the police, and to keep John Lakin and his son from talking, the SWAT team executed Mr. Lakin and John Jr., a la Waco, Texas? We know for a fact that social workers are trained and instructed to look for guns in homes where children live. They're told that guns in a home with children endanger those children, despite the evidence to the contrary. They are instructed to report that particular home to the police. Did the help aide tell the police that John Lakin threatened her in a wrong attempt to have his guns confiscated, thinking all the while that she would be helping the child? According to all reports, no crime was ever committed by Mr. Lakin, his wife, or his son. The police failed to produce a warrant because there was no warrant. John Lakin legally and lawfully denied the police access to his home based upon the fact that they did not have a warrant. Officer Puzzella illegally and unlawfully kicked down Mr. Lakin's door. John Lakin felt that his life was in danger. He knew that his rights were being violated, and in self-defense of his person and his home, John Lakin shot Officer Puzzella in the chest. It is tragic. None of it should have ever happened in America. Helen says, and I quote, "I understand John Lakin. I understand what he did. And I understand why he did it. If the police come to my door without a legal and lawful warrant, I too will deny them access. If they break down my door in response, I too will shoot in defense of my family and my home. Their criminal action will tell me that my life and the lives of my family members are in immediate danger. And I will respond exactly as did John Lakin. John Lakin is a free man. His son's life was admittedly cut short, but John Lakin Jr. is also a free man." A friend once said, quote, "Any man without principles that he is ready and willing to die for at any given moment is already dead and is of no use or consequence whatsoever," end quote. My friend said it. John Lakin and John Jr. lived it.
It's rolling right now.
It's coming your way.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Five, four, three, two, one.
Okay, go ahead. I think we've got you in.
My name is Crawford. I am located in my house at on Clark Road in Cushata, Louisiana, 45 miles southeast of Shreveport, on Highway 71 on the east side of the river. I have helped my life threatened. I am in fear for my life. I'm asking for any able-bodied man between the ages of 18 and 45 who will uphold the law and defend those who are being abused by those who violate the law to come and assist me in any way they can, if believed to be a witness of my execution. These people have come here representing themselves as FBI agents without any claim of authority or demonstration of authority. They came through my door with force, without my invitation, with guns drawn. And in fear of my life, I asked them to put them down. I met force with force in protection of my life property. I explained to them that I was not a U.S. citizen resident or a person subject to their jurisdiction, that I am not the U.S. citizen resident who was mentioned in the Children with the Enemy Act of 12 United States Code 95B, but I have nothing to do with the bankruptcy. And if they do not have a valid warrant, they are here illegally, they are trespassing, and I ask them to leave. I was able to get them to read the warrant, what they claimed was a warrant. It was not a warrant, it's a writ of attachment signed by a federal magistrate. I explained to them what a warrant was, a Fourth Amendment probable cause warrant with sworn affidavit, and they ignored me. I explained to them that I would have no interest in hurting any of them, that I am in fear of my life, and so far, they have killed my dog. They have kidnapped my mother. I don't know where she is. I don't have an idea of where she is. And I need help. If nothing else, I need witnesses or video cameras to record this.
Okay, let's start from the top. Your first name?
Lynn.
Lynn?
Mm-hmm.
Last name?
Crawford.
Crawford, C-R-A-W-F-O-R-D.
Right.
And your address, Lynn?
Well, I don't have an address. The house is located on Clark Road.
Clark Road.
And I'm not a resident.
Okay.
And it is located on Clark Road in the area known as the town of Cushata.
Okay. That's your abode.
Right.
Clark Road. And what else in the town of Cushata?
I beg your pardon?
It's on, just on Clark Road.
Right. Clark Road is runs along next to the river.
Okay. Is there any
south from the main thoroughfare to the city, on the next to the river.
Count up to the Fulkeshauer for it.
Fulkeshauer.
S-H-A-T-T. Kashana, and your phone number?
Area code 218-932-6272. I have previously and sufficiently reserved my right not to be compelled to perform under any contract, commercial agreement, or bankruptcy. I have not entered into knowingly, willingly, and voluntarily with full disclosure and the knowledge of the likely consequences. I explained this to them in detail. They have ignored it. They have my house surrounded.
They have your house surrounded now?
Yes, I'm under siege right now.
You are under siege.
Any help locally that I can get. I don't know anyone other than relatives, and I've talked to them already.
Can you stand by? Let me see what we can do. Hold on.
Yes.
Okay, Bill, that's what we have.
What do we know about what's happening now?
What we do know, and I'll give you the latest update I have, from various sources around the country. We have Linda Thompson that has called them. We have a friend of mine, Felix Wilson, out of Mississippi, that has engaged some friends around the area. We have groups from just south of Kashada on their way now. They're probably on site with video cameras. We have the Gadsden Militia Minutemen are on their way. They've been activated with video cameras. We probably have to the tune of 20 to 30 people either there on the ground or en route as we speak. Now, there has been a discussion with the through Ed Brown out of our Delaware group with one of the FBI agents there on the scene, indicating that we don't want to turn this thing into anything other than a peaceful arrangement, and we're suggesting that that we get somebody locally that this man knows to just defuse the situation.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, this afternoon, that conversation transpired between myself and Johnny Johnson, and we began to mobilize our assets across the country. You heard that some people were already moving and acting and making calls and doing the proper things to prevent the loss of life. Linda Thompson, as always, was at the forefront. Many different militias mobilized. The forces of the Second Continental Army of the Republic mobilized and began to deploy forces into the state of Louisiana. Late this evening, the FBI and the federal agencies that were surrounding the house had a command post set up, bright lights shining, and there would have been another executed American. But all of a sudden, these people realized that there were many video cameras on the scene and many armed militia personnel moving into the area. They admitted that they did not have a warrant. They admitted that they were operating illegally and unlawfully and unconstitutionally. They recalled their personnel, they broke their command post, they took down their lights, and they left. When we made the statement on the air, and when the many militias across this country made the statement that there will be no more Wacos, we were deadly serious. We do not wish to hurt anyone. And no one who was moving into the area was going there to hurt anyone. As long as the federal forces were operating legally and lawfully, if they had the proper legal authority to do what they intended to do, we would not have done anything except film it, videotape it, provide witnesses to make sure that, in fact, what they did was legal and lawful. If they attempted anything like what I read to you that happened in Brunswick, Ohio, or in Waco, Texas, or at Ruby Ridge, we were prepared and we were committed to fight. If the federal government wants the citizens of this nation to obey the law, they first must obey the law. And it's not going to be so easy for them in the future if they fail to fulfill their oath, support, and operate within the limits prescribed by the Constitution for the United States of America and the laws of this land. We are committed, and for the first time, militias across this country operated in concert with each other and together for a common goal, peacefully, and it worked. And you will see more of it. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. Join a militia. Support your militia. They are your last line of defense against a totalitarian police state. And God bless each and every single one of you.